to a different sort of star now, one that shines in the firmament of haute couture. His name, Valentino Garavani.
What do women want?
They want to be beautiful.
Valentino dressed Audrey Hepburn and Jackie O, Vogue's Anna Wintour and Gwyneth Paltrow. His reign lasted for 4.5 decades. He retired last year at age 75. His story and the story of Giancarlo Giametti, his partner in business and life, is told in the new documentary, Valentino, the Last Emperor. The director, Matt Turnauer, says Valentino is a straightforward guy.
He's only interested in aesthetics and beauty, beautiful dresses, and also the fame and fortune of Valentino. That's Valentino. Giancarlo Giametti, the partner, very complex. And you see the dynamic of these two men. And it's really a story about how you get there with someone else. Because they say in the film, many people, there would be no Valentino without Giancarlo Giametti. So the movie is sort of a story of the power behind the throne, but also about how these two people came together to form really a whole person.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear a little bit about what Giametti himself says about that.
Valentino is a above control. Valentino doesn't care. Valentino does what he wants. Valentino is Valentino.
You know, the Valentino didn't need a film crew following him around. He hasn't been an icon for 50 years. He couldn't really be more famous in his category. And he also is someone who presents himself as this perfect image all the time. He never a hair out of place, and there's sort of a myth of Valentino. And this movie really threatened him, because he saw that we were capturing him in unguarded moments where he was showing the real Valentino, and he hated that. Mm-hmm. So I would give him these sort of director-to-star lectures. If you don't show who you really are, people will hate you in this movie, because you need to be imperfect, because an audience is going to watch this and think everything was handed to you on a silver platter. You'll come off like the Marie Antoinette of fashion, and it will destroy your reputation. Of course, he didn't get it at all and didn't listen to me, but now he sees it. Because people have said to me, we didn't know about this man. We knew nothing about him. And now when you see this movie, you really do.
Let's play the clip where you did capture him being very much less than perfect.
I am here to decide something very important, and I don't want to be filmed. I'm sorry. Okay? Otherwise, I go. And I go. Bye-bye.
No, really. What's happening there is Valentino confronting the end of his career. Because that scene was shot in the kind of ending stages of building an exhibition that was to really be the great retrospective of Valentino. It happened in Rome 2 years ago. And he walked in a room where his most beautiful, important dresses, about 100 of them, were on the wall in mannequins, sort of like, I don't know, they're like butterflies pinned to a wall, 3 stories high.
It's a good image.
Well, yeah, that's a pretty image. But what he saw looked like a catacomb. And he saw these mannequins that looked like bodies. He was having a devastating personal crisis, because here you see someone in the third act preparing to retire, although he hadn't announced it yet. He hadn't revealed anything. Not having come to terms with that. And it's kind of like a death.
This is not only a portrait of a marriage, but this man's coming, as you say, to terms with the fact that he's not going to be doing this anymore. And even though he has everything, you show the villa in Rome, the corporate jet, the yacht, the major domo, the cute little pugs, he won't be walking out on that runway with his own collection.
Here's someone who has it all. I mean, you've understated the wealth, really. I mean, there's a chateau near Versailles that is not to be believed. I mean, it was the chateau of Louis XIV's mistress, in fact. And this is his private world.
I was thinking Napoleon without the violence, so I came close.
Someone did say to me, the movie is what it would be like to follow Napoleon around with a camera. I don't know if that's entirely fair to either man.
Will we ever see anyone like him again in the world of high fashion?
I think you can definitively say no, because when he started 50 years ago, you could do this. The world economy was very different. Fashion was very different. The world was very different. Women changed 3 times a day in certain levels of society. Women work now. The clients aren't there. And now fashion is corporatized. So Valentino was literally, to use the cliche, a boy with a dream, you know, from an unglamorous town in Italy who made it to Paris when he was 17 and interned and wanted this and got it. And went on this journey with Giancarlo Giametti, and they made it. They built their own empire. Today, It's the money that makes the decisions, and they pick the talent. So you'll never have someone again who is able to start with nothing and work their way to, you know, the multi-billion dollar level.
Matt Turnauer, director of the new documentary, Valentino, The Last Emperor, which is opening around the country this weekend. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Warner Brothers, the purveyor of everything from Looney Tunes cartoons to the latest Batman films, is cracking its vault wide open. Now, the studio's been slowly rolling out about 100 vintage films a year over the past 12 years. Now movie fans can browse just about all of the archives of Warner Brothers Pictures, MGM, and RKO. You can find Greta Garbo's silent version of Anna Karenina, or something from the early days of Demi Moore's career. Not to compare Demi Moore and Greta Garbo. Joining us to talk about all these treasures is our film critic, Destin Thompson. Destin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
How many films are left for them to make public?
They've got 6,800.
My!
And they're rolling it out about 30 a year, so it'll go on beyond our lifespans. And that's not counting the cartoons and the TV shows that are coming, like Hawaiian Eye.
Hawaiian. How do I remember that? Da, 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 da,
yep.
da, da, da.
You see?
Hawaiian.
Just that little chord is what's going to help them make a buck.
By the way, you could peruse their archives at warnerarchive.com, all one word. You've been going through the list. What do you want to point out to us?
This is a fabulous thing to do because not only can you click on the movies, but you get a little preview of what it looks like. Mm-hmm. It's going to be uneven quality because they're straight from the vaults. Who knows what condition they're in, but they're mostly in good condition. I'm just amazed at some of the things I found, like The Big Circus with Victor Mature, which was sort of a low-rent, greatest show on Earth.
The okay show on Earth, yeah.
There's nothing as gay as a wonderful day at the Big Circus.
Is this Big Circus?
You guessed it. There's nothing as gay as a day at the Big Circus.
Well, I dare say I think there's a whole new audience that's available in the
yeah,
2000s for them, don't they?
And it was made by Irwin Allen, who made the disaster movies of the 70s later on. Lots of these big-name people that you, in movies you haven't seen, that were sort of the second-tier movies, not necessarily saying they're bad movies, but they're just the other movies that didn't quite stay there in the pantheon. So this can sort of replicate what it used to be like to be around in the 40s when people went to the movies 3, 4, 5 times a week.
All right, you've got another clip for us.
You're going to die in a chair at 11 o'clock tonight, not 1 minute before.
If I wanted to suicide myself in this dump, I would have had plenty of time in the last 2 years.
You had the time, all right. You just didn't have the guts.
Guts!
Like Turkey, what's his name?
Oh, my.
Through the veins of both his wrists and quietly bled to death. And Frankie.
The state sentenced me to die in the electric chair. The state was in earnest, and the state can do its own dirty work.
Recognize that voice at all?
I recognize the voice. I don't know who it is.
Ben Gazzara.
Ben Gazzara. Okay, Ben Gazzara.
Also, Vincent Price and Rod Steiger are in this. And Sammy Davis Jr. is one of the convicts. This is based on the true story of John Resco, who was condemned to the electric chair.
Mm-hmm.
At the last minute, he was saved by FDR. So, you know, there's lots of little treasures like this that you can pick up.
Tell us about some of the other names that we're going to encounter in these archives, if we take a look.
Everyone that you know is somewhere in there, from Mickey Rooney to Cary Grant. Jack Webb of Dragnet. He plays a tough marine drill instructor in a movie called The D.I.
I remember that film for some reason.
And there's another movie called The Three Comrades, which is the only screen credit that F. Scott Fitzgerald ever got as a screenwriter, despite years of working on Hollywood backlots.
A toast, gentlemen. To those of our comrades who are not here tonight, those to whom peace came sooner than to us, and to those same comrades of the French, Italians, English, and Americans, to the comrades living and dead of all men.
Well, what's been the most fun of going through this?
It's like going through your Hollywood's attic and finding all those crazy, quirky photos and family relics that you'd forgotten all about.
Now, to see them, DVDs, download, what do you do?
It's literally made to order. You call for it, and they literally press it for you and send it to you in a brown paper package, you know, sort of thing. Or you can have it sent to you digitally. So it really is almost your little trace of the archives for you.
Is there something that filmmakers of today can learn by watching these films when Hollywood, even though it was a factory, there was something to be said for the way in which they did business.
Absolutely. When you watch all these films, you know that it's from Warner Brothers, or you know it's from MGM, and there's this sense that it was sort of more magical because you recognize the way they photographed for Warner Brothers. That old sort of family, familiar feeling of Hollywood is gone, which comes from the factory kind of conditions.
Our film critic, Dessen Thompson. Dessen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And you can get a glimpse inside the vault with video clips on our website, npr.org. Space, the final frontier. You don't have to be a Star Trek fan to recognize that opening, which preceded the voyages of the Starship Enterprise and her valiant crew, Kirk, Spock, Bones, McCoy, and Leslie. Leslie? You'd have to be a true Trekkie to know that a character called Lieutenant Leslie appeared in 40 of the 79 original Star Trek episodes. Now, those unschooled in dilithium crystals and photon torpedoes are forgiven for never having heard of Mr. Leslie or the actor who played him, Eddie Paskey. Eddie Paskey was also William Shatner's stand-in. When he wasn't filling in Captain Kirk's stage position as scenes were being set up, he often had a minor role as Lieutenant Leslie, who seemed to have jobs just all over the Enterprise. The new Star Trek feature film opening soon, we've asked Eddie Paskey to join us in a couple of weeks on Weekend Edition. We've got questions, of course, but we'll get him to answer some of yours, too. Just go to our blog, npr.org/soapbox, and submit your questions. But be warned, Trekkies, he's an actor, not a physicist, okay? We doubt that he knows how the Heisenberg compensators work.
Oh, we're about to find out what President Obama, Scarlett Johansson, and LeBron James have in common. They're all said to be fans of SpongeBob SquarePants, as are millions of other people around the world. This year marks SpongeBob's 10th anniversary, so NPR's Elizabeth Blair tries to figure out why he's lasted so long.
SpongeBob SquarePants is crazy popular. One week last month, 9 of the top 20 spots on cable were SpongeBob. 9 of the top 20. How can that be? My 4-year-old likes it for the gags. Robert Thompson, PhD of Syracuse University, likes the aesthetic.
It's just so trippy. With shows like SpongeBob, who needs drugs?
Hail, oh great Swami of the Gnarly Pounders! We seek audience with thee.
Plus, we want to talk to you.
SpongeBob makes no sense. He lives underwater in a pineapple in a place called Bikini Bottom. At heart, he's an eternal optimist.
Well, we burned our food, ruined our tent, and lost all our water. Patrick, we are going to need to use our razor-sharp quick wits if we're going to make it out of here alive.
Gotcha.
But he's also prone to melodrama. Tom Kenny is the voice of SpongeBob.
SpongeBob is pretty bipolar. I mean, his highs are very high, but he can also be dashed into the most abject sorrow.
That stupid toy!
It's a wild bunch down there in Bikini Bottom. There's an evil plankton, the greedy Mr. Krabs, and Squidward, SpongeBob's cranky neighbor.
All right! What's going on?
It's like the Honeymooners meets the Flintstones on speed. Underwater. SpongeBob's best pal is a lumpy starfish named Patrick. Think Barney Rubble, only dimmer. Their relationship makes the show, says 7-year-old Jamie Sunata.
SpongeBob SquarePants is about friendship.
I'm waiting.
We're waiting. SpongeBob? We waiting for?
We're waiting for the mailman. He's bringing me a free toy.
I love toys. Can I wait for your toy with you?
Why, sure.
We're waiting.
SpongeBob is so popular, Nickelodeon squeezes everything they can out of it. Brown Johnson is Nickelodeon's president of animation.
So if we're feeling sort of down in the ratings, we just put it everywhere.
Sometimes it's on 8 times a day. The guy who created SpongeBob is a marine biologist turned animator. When Steven Hillenburg first pitched SpongeBob, Brown Johnson says it was a fight to put it on.
Certain parts of the business at Nickelodeon were like, oh no, it'll never be successful. It's about a sponge, and what's that? And it's yellow, and that's a bad color, and you know, it's like not eating the yellow M&Ms or something.
And now you can buy SpongeBob underwear and SpongeBob mac and cheese.
I don't think we can possibly overestimate how much this has penetrated American culture.
Syracuse University's Bob Thompson.
You watch it when you're a little kid and you like it because it's pretty and it's funny and they do goofy things. You watch it again when you're 10, and suddenly all of the new mysteries of life begin to sort of pop up in here as well. And then you watch it when you're a 21-year-old in a frat house, and suddenly it's got a whole other quality that appeals to you.
45 million people over 18 watch SpongeBob every month, according to Nickelodeon. Tom Kenny says he'll gladly be the voice of SpongeBob for another 10 years.
Even if the show doesn't go for 10 years, I'll be the guy pushing a grocery cart around with the tinfoil hat on his head going, hey, you know who I used to be? Bah! Does that ring a bell? Remember that show? Bah! Give me money. Give me a quarter.
As part of SpongeBob's 10th anniversary celebration, tonight there's a special episode with a guest appearance by Johnny Depp. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
And if you can't get enough, you can watch a video of the actors who provide the voices of SpongeBob and his friends at npr.org.